The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Now, we've been inviting people in over the last week or so and asking them to look back on 2018. And today's the turn of Dublin footballer Philly McMahon. Afternoon, Philly.
Afternoon.
Thanks a million for coming in. It has been a crazy year for you, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's been up and down. But sure, that's what life's all about.
Yeah. We'll start with the highs, I suppose, first.
Yeah.
The four in a row. Yeah,
it was nice to win the four in a row. Nice to see the happiness we've given the Dublin fans and the Dublin community.
Yeah. And you never tire of winning All-Irelands. That's a stupid question.
Yeah, no, definitely not. We kind of all realise that it's a short period of time playing at that level. So it's trying to grasp it as much as you can while you can. And as I said, it's kind of understanding who you represent, not just the impact you have on yourself and your family, but the wider community.
Yeah. And the manager, Jim Gavin, I read an article that he works in air traffic control.
He does, yeah.
And he brings the same approach to managing the Dublin team.
Does he bring the same approach?
He's very methodical.
Sure.
He's very methodical.
He would be.
Jumbo jets coming in with 300 people each. You have to be quite specific, don't
definitely.
You?
Yeah, he would be. That's why he's probably so relaxed on the sideline. You know, he's always thinking in the moment, and some people challenge that style of the way he is, but it works, doesn't it? That's the success has shown.
Yeah, we spoke about the book before, and I watched the documentary. The documentary's going to the cinema now.
It was in the cinema
last week.
So we had a viewing and a Q&A after. It was a lovely evening with all the people that were in the documentary. All the brave people that stepped out into the public and spoke about their addiction.
Yeah.
And are chipping away, basically, by doing that, chipping away at the stigma. Like,
what was it like for you to see yourself on a huge screen? Is that a bit freaky?
Yeah. It was like, the reason why I thought the guys done, Kim Barkley and Eve had done a great job in the documentary, was that they kind of, you hit loads of different emotions. Like, you know, I hit certain different emotions because of my father was on it. But it was like, there was happy, there was sad, there was anger, there was kind of cringe at sometimes, you know, but it was really put well, and it was kind of, they touched on all the stakeholders in terms of the topic.
And it's nice to have your dad in that documentary, isn't it?
Yeah, so we would have more footage of my dad, because they can only put a certain amount on the documentary, so we actually have the uncut version,
which
my mum's going to show us all at Christmas time,
that
so that's going to be
thing.
Lovely. Yeah, it's going to be nice. It's special memories for us, and the first time I heard his voice on the documentary was quite tough, you know, and my poor mum, she was, we were all watching it in the house, and our phone was hopping, you know, and everybody was ringing her saying she was doing great and she's doing brilliant. And then I was like, "Mam, will you watch the documentary?" But she said to me after she couldn't, because it was so tough for her. So
it was the 1st of July your dad died?
1st of July, yeah.
But he'd been sick for quite some time.
He'd been sick over a year with stomach cancer, yeah.
Right. That's a horrible thing.
But he gave me lessons right through it, and to never give up, and to use humour in any way you can possibly do it. Like, you know, when he got diagnosed, he said, you know, the doctor said, "Look, if you're terminally ill," and he says, "Am I going to lose my hair?" But he was already bald, like, you know.
Right.
So he was that type of guy. Didn't want to know the time frame, and just battled on right till the end, you know.
Yeah. Tell us about the moment at the end of the All Ireland against Tyrone, and you put on a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I had a friend of mine, a really good childhood friend of mine, who texted me and said, "Look out on the hill when you're walking around the parade." And I normally look around in the crowd and like soak in the energy, and couldn't see anything. And then at the end, I was looking around when we brought the cup over to the hill, and then I was just about to walk away, and then I looked down at the barrier and I see my friend, and he had the T-shirt, and he had a T-shirt with Walter White, because my dad, he looked like Walter White, bald, had a kind of a beard, and it kind of had a stencil of Walter White and saying, "Philly's here," you know. So he threw it over the barrier and I stuck it on. It was very emotional.
So your dad was there in spirit?
Yeah, well, I'm very spiritual, you know. When I was struggling through that year, the last 2 years, in fact, in terms of football, he was all that was on my mind, you know.
Yeah, driving you on.
Yeah, definitely.
Did he play football himself?
So my dad would have grown up in the Troubles. Yeah. He was from West Belfast, and he would have found it very hard to play sport because he would have had to fight for his beliefs and got involved in the Republican movement, and that's what happened.
Did he talk to you much about growing up in Belfast?
Yeah, he would have. Yeah, he would have spoke about what you had to do and everything. Yeah.
How is your ma now? Because it's only 6 months since.
Yeah, she's the typical human being who's struggling and with grief, and she's grieving, and she's good and bad days, but she's the rock of the family. She's a hero in all our eyes, and she keeps us all together. So
there's a lovely moment in the documentary where your mother talks to Aileen, who lost her daughter to heroin addiction.
Yeah.
And it's just two mothers.
It's beautiful, yeah. It's bonding, a lovely piece, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And that's happening every day, right? Like there's mothers all over this country that are being tortured in their own thoughts, thinking that it's their fault, you know, thinking that they've done things wrong in terms of the recovery, or the kids, showing the kids tough love. And mothers never really do anything wrong in that case. They always support, and it's the other siblings or the other person in the family that always think, you know, you shouldn't do that. You should kick them out of the house, or you should show them tough love. But mothers, they generally stay close to the addicts. It's, you know, it's the way they are. But that's why we need to support families more so in this issue.
So you lost John, and it wasn't to a drug overdose, but it was as a result of him being a heroin addict.
Mm.
And nearly one person dies in Ireland a day because of a drug overdose. And we have a very high rate, third highest in Europe. Mm. So we need to do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've taken this on. It's sort of John, to create a legacy for John, is it?
Yeah, well, generally what happens is when you have somebody that dies from a drug or alcohol related death, depending on the relationship you have with the individual, there's a kind of an activist style that you will feel from the grieving. A special death is basically very similar to suicide, which is the equivalent of two deaths, and it takes around average of 4 years to actually understand grieving from it. So for me, my role is to try, use my profile as a sporting person to help this issue, and to do things that John would have liked me to do in terms of helping others, and I suppose help family members that are going through what I went through. So, you know, that's what I would have loved if I had the chance again.
And is any of it motivated by, you know, if this was around, if whatever you do was happening when John was alive, that maybe he'd still be alive today?
Yeah, there's a huge part of it, right? So John was 6'4". He was very thin, and then when he took heroin for a period of time, it took his physical appearance changed. So when John went to London, he became clean because he didn't know any other addicts or drug dealers, but he still found it very hard to reintegrate into society. He couldn't socialise with other people that weren't addicts. He couldn't get a job. So that had a huge impact on him actually going back on drugs. So the social hooks in heroin is massive. Societal hooks is having a huge impact on addicts, especially with the stigma and the shame.
Okay, we'll get to the stigma and shame in a moment. You've just come from Mountjoy today, and you're working with inmates in there. What are you doing with them?
So we have, excuse the language, we have a movement going on in there called the Unfucked Movement.
Right.
And basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to help the individual change their self-beliefs, which impacts the culture, in the prison, and then hopefully when they reintegrate into society, they impact the communities.
Right.
So it's kind of a movement in many ways.
So the Unfucked, there's three C's. What do they stand for?
Culture, change, community.
Right.
Yeah. So this is a prisoner-led, it's a prisoner-led program. So I'm only facilitating it, they're the ones coming up with it. So it's theirs, they own it. They have a sense of belonging to it, so they really respect it.
So the aim for them is that when they get out, they'll have something to offer their community in a real way.
Yeah, well, see, the biggest problem is it's called restorative justice, right? Prison is meant to be, if you commit a crime, they take your liberty away, and that's how you do your punishment. But there has to be a kind of a rehabilitation process to it, or else they'll just keep committing crimes. We'll have more victims in society, and ultimately it costs the country a lot of money, and we'll have a lot more problems. So when these guys reintegrate in society, they've changed their underlying issue that's ultimately led them to the crime. And hopefully then they can, you know, find a way of getting back inside, because they have a lot of problems. When they get out, you have the newspaper standing outside the prison taking pictures of them, and they're kind of going, right, I'm in the newspaper now, I'm not going to get a job, but I'm going to go back and commit crime.
Yeah.
So the media doesn't
it's
help.
It's the easiest path.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a body and mind part to this. So you they work out in the gym, and you give them programs to do that, and then you were talking to them today.
Yeah.
You regularly give them what would you call it, talks, classes?
Talks. Yeah. 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 So what we're trying to do is we're looking at the everyday actions and thoughts of them of a prisoner. Right, see what they're going through. So this time of the year, it's very tough for prisoners because they're not with their families at Christmas, right? So it's really tough. Drugs in prisons now start to increase because they're trying to deal with these issues. So the drugs obviously surpasses the pain that they have and gets rid of the pain. So today, we'd bring them, they'd go in and do a gym session for an hour, and they'd come up and do a talk, and we'd chat about certain topics and how they're feeling and stuff like that. And we do a lot of other activities, like we do sports days, we do, you know, days, we're creating a day for the family to come in 2 days before Christmas.
Right.
Just so that, you know, it has an impact on the families more so than not on the prisoner. The families feel.
And is that a new thing?
That's new. That's come in with the Unfucked movement. So.
Right.
Very
who came up with that idea?
Myself and the prisoners.
Right. So and then who brokered it then with the prison authorities?
We have to then go to the governor and say, is this possible? And they're very supportive in that, because they realise that, look, if we can support guys, you know, and their family members coming in close to Christmas, it's going to have an impact on the drug taking in the prison.
I know that you said in either in the book or in the documentary that when you went into Mountjoy first that you recognised four or five of the guys from Ballymun. Do you feel a huge responsibility to them now because you've started something with them?
I don't feel a responsibility because I'm not in there for any particular person. I'm in there for anybody that wants to change.
Right.
So if for example, if any of them five lads didn't want to get involved in my programme, I will still continue on. But I ultimately want to help them go through a journey that I've maybe a small part to play in it, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, these guys can be incredible people, like, when they get a second chance in life. Like, I'll give you an example. Our first guy that we had in a programme that reintegrated in society, I'd ring him every... He'd text me or ring me every week, so we stay connected, and he rang me today, and he actually said to me, he says, it's just the simple things in life I really love doing now. And he says, I actually like my missus giving out to me now. You know, so little simple things. But yeah, again, it's just this thing that education with people, we got to realise that these are people that have really deep underlying issues that are impacting their choices.
Can you explain to people, because, you know, I've had Anne Buckley in here and various people over the years, and it's people find it difficult to understand about, you know, and your book was called The Choice, and you often hear people say, well, I was brought up in exactly the same circumstances as those people, and I didn't take drugs, and I'm fine, you know. You've heard that yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big thing for me is that in life, if you are living a good life, you know, go and help others. If not, find a way to overcome that problem that you might have, or get help to overcome that problem. And just because you went through that pathway, it doesn't mean you should judge others that haven't went through that pathway. So we can never, it's the program, one of the values we have, and one of the values I was given from a very young age is to be non-judgmental in life. And when you have somebody saying that, that doesn't mean they're bad people, they're just people that have different values. So you don't look negatively upon people that are in vulnerable positions.
And you learned an awful lot from your brother's mistakes.
Yeah.
And can you remember a time when you said, I'm not going to go down that path, that's not for me? Did you see him at
There wasn't one particular event. You know, but it would have been over probably when I was hitting about 15, 16, that the guys that I was hanging around with, some of them that are in Mountjoy now, they wouldn't invite me to go off and commit crime. Like, so some of them, they'd go off with one of the young lads that's really small. He'd be able to put his hand on their tails in shopping centres, and they'd be the security if the kid got
sketch,
caught.
Yeah.
They'd come back to the blocks with loads of money, and I'd be like, oh, geez, I like a bit of that money. But they knew not to invite me because my brother wouldn't be happy with them.
Okay.
But also, I was playing sport as well. So I was fortunate that that happened for me, because ultimately, if I went and done one of them, I probably would have been hooked because of the money situation. No different to what's happening now in social disadvantaged areas where there's people, as kids, you know, being groomed to sell drugs.
Yeah. And you met those girls and they were saying, you know, they have to work very hard to earn 100 yeah. euro, and then there's people driving around in what, Audis, was yeah. it, what, BMWs or whatever, 181s.
Yeah.
That's from.
It's trying to show these people, instead of like the old educational piece of don't do drugs or don't commit crime, that hasn't worked. Like,
well, what do you think it'll work?
We got to show them. That's, I'm hoping that this movement creates a huge network of people that have made mistakes in their lives, and they can go back into the communities and show these young people, this is the pathway I took, and this is how bad it can go. No different to the way I looked at John, the pain he had. The message, we ultimately don't want to tell our kids to go on drugs. We don't. But we have the fourth highest overdose rate in Europe. Like, that has a huge impact.
So people who have recovered, to go back into their communities and, you know, say, you know, if you choose this way, you'll be...
Be an example, yeah.
Yeah. And just on the decriminalisation of drugs, and you went to Portugal and they introduced that back in 2001, and it seems to be working for them, is it?
Yeah, it's. I think the message has to be clear that no policy in the world is perfect. You know, so you'll have people countering the decriminalisation model, and certainly the Portuguese model, and they're right to. Everything has flaws, everything. But certainly the policy we have now is worse. So I would see the Portuguese model working much better than what we have at the minute. You'll have people arguing that when you decriminalise drugs, you normalise drugs. That's a confusion piece. That's legalisation of drugs. So when you decriminalise drugs, it's still illegal to take drugs. Okay, still illegal. So the message is still the same. Don't take drugs, it's still illegal to take.
It's what happens after you're caught.
It's how you're dealt with it.
Yes. Yeah.
So you break down the stigma and the shame, right?
So what happens in Portugal?
Well, you're basically brought in front of a dissuasion committee, which is basically...
A dissuasion committee?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's called a dissuasion commission. It sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So you're basically sitting in front of two, maybe three people. And
who are they?
Well... You'd have the person that's in charge of the committee, basically.
Right.
He'd be sitting there on there'd be probably a doctor or a psychologist, depending.
And medical people.
Could be a social worker, yeah. And basically they're just asking the questions of, have you got a problematic drug issue, you know? And then they give you a fine and they refer you onto a program, and it's up to you if you want to take that option. So it breaks down that stigma. Like, there's so many people in this country right now that are taking their lives because of that shame and stigma of being a heroin addict or a junkie. Like, that's the word, that horrible word that's being used. And if we break that stigma down, ultimately people will be able to say, okay, I have a drug problem, I'm going to get help.
Yeah,
it's not a problem to say that I have a problem.
So in Portugal, they go and they sit in front of that committee or commission, and then they're sent off to get medical help.
Yeah,
and if they're caught again, then it's a criminal.
They're
offense.
Sanctioned. Yeah,
right.
They're sanctioned offense. Then. Yeah, but if they whatever crime
and the dealer is that's a crime.
Well, here's the good thing about it is the crime will go up. Why? Well, because. It depends on the trends of drugs coming into, certain drugs coming into the country, certain drugs coming into Europe. But the big thing is that the guards will be able to focus on drug dealers, not drug addicts.
Yeah. You spoke to, is it Pat Lee? Is he the assistant commissioner?
Assistant commissioner, yeah.
And he said that a guard arresting a person who takes drugs has never cured them of addiction.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, have you ever heard a guard say to anybody else that they arrested a drug addict, and basically the drug addict got a criminal record for it and helped them then eventually come off drugs? It's never happened.
Never happened. Right?
So there's no positivity around incriminating drug addicts.
So you're going to keep shouting that out from the rooftops?
Yeah, we need to. There's, like, you know, you've got a huge amount of emphasis put on mental health, which is brilliant. You have over 1 million people from darkness to light marching, and that's amazing. There's a huge amount of deaths in terms of drug addiction in this country, drug and alcohol related deaths, and we need to get together as a country and come together and say, hold on, this is not good enough.
You don't drink?
I don't drink, no.
Never?
No.
Right.
Never drink, yeah. Never like, just never like the taste of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you ever feel that you were missing out?
No, I was very lucky. I was able to have the crack with the lads, and personality-wise, I sometimes look like the person that's drunk
in terms of that.
But I tasted it when I was very young, and I just didn't like the taste of it and just said, no, it's not for me.
Congratulations, you got engaged.
I did, thanks.
Under the Northern Lights.
You've
set the bar fairly high for all the other lads around the place.
Well, I have a friend, and he closed down Stephen's Green, so I kind of had to the bar a little bit, and the Northern Lights was the next step.
And did Sarah know? What, she got an inkling, or?
I don't know. We did it towards the end of the holiday, so she probably had a lot of people saying to her, like, you know, he's going to propose over there, so I kind of had to play it cool. And funnily, we had it in Iceland, and we were going for a meal one night, and I said to the receptionist, I'm going to propose this to my girlfriend on the way back, will you take it? And he was really introverted, like, and he was like, so we were walking back in, I said, Sarah, come on, we get a picture at the Blue Lagoon, the pill. And your man's looking at me like, to go, is it going to happen now? So she's like, ah, no, you got a picture yourself. So she ruined it. And your man was looking at me going, is it going to happen? What's going to happen? So she ruined it a couple of occasions, but we were very lucky that the second last night we were there, we got the Northern Lights. Hadn't been seen in 2 months. And we got it, so it was incredible.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
And what did you do? Because this is, you know, often comes up in conversation. Did you get a pretend ring, or was it a real ring? Or
No, I got a real ring for her. Yeah. She's very hard to buy presents and stuff like that. So I was in the mindset of actually going and getting a pretend ring to then get her to pick her own. But I'm glad she's happy with the one I picked out.
Right, brave
man. At least I think, and anyway.
Right. So you went off and bought her.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
On your own.
Well, I think I know our style a little bit, you know.
Right.
So.
And how did you know the size?
I didn't. I had a chat with my friend, and he kind of gave me a bit of an education piece on what to do and everything right. else. And then I just went in, and she had an idea. She'd spoke about a little bit before about her. Our nanny's kind of style, and right. So kind of went off that.
Yeah. There's loads of lovely texts here. Will you stay with us? We'll just take a commercial break, and we'll read out some of those to you. Philly McMahon's going to stay with us.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Philly McMahon is still with us. We're talking through 2018 and other things. Philly is a great advocate for all walks of life. Lost my dad to cancer in 2015 after a year of illness. I'd give anything to hear his voice again. Fair play, Philly Mann. That's Philly Mann there. Yeah, that's going to be your moment, isn't it? When you'll all be sitting around the telly and...
Yeah, that'll be special. Like, you know, Christmas was very special for us because we used to have John back from London, and now there's 2 seats empty. So we'll have to fill that with a bit of energy, and that'll be it, that video.
I really admire that Philly uses his position to help others. He has a great talent for communicating, and when you can get people to listen to what you have to say, it's priceless. That's a Ballymun listener. And thank you, Philly, for speaking out about such a personal thing to you. My brother died by overdose 12 years ago, and it still hurts so much to talk about it. Part of that hurt is the shame I feel about how he died. There's a stigma surrounding death by drug overdose. I'm now a professional, a mother of 2, but still find it so hard to explain how my brother died. Please continue to do your work. And that shame and stigma you experienced in a real way, so much so that you changed your name.
Yeah. So my name when I was younger was Caffrey, and then I changed to my dad's name, which was McMahon, yeah. So that was my mum's maiden name, and I changed it to McMahon.
Right.
Mm.
And looking back on that decision, how do you feel?
I would have liked always to have my dad's name in anyway, McMahon, but obviously it was wrong, you know, that I was uneducated on the whole drug issue, and the country wasn't equipped to deal with the heroin epidemic that we had, and certainly Ballymun wasn't. And if I'd have known now, what I know now, I certainly wouldn't have been embarrassed, or I wouldn't have had shame around my brother, his problems, his issues,
Lovely to hear Philly. Read his book. What a fabulous guy, doing such great work. He's not just a great footballer. Happy Christmas to Philly and his family, Maura and Turnure. And wants to say there. Oh yeah. Anonymous wants to say they were devastated to hear Philly got engaged. Seriously though, wish him well. And Philly came and spoke at our GAA club, Scotstown GAA, several weeks ago, and the impact of his talk cannot be measured. It should be mandatory for all TY students if you had the time. Or they could clone you, Philly.
Yeah.
People have got to take responsibility for their own decisions and mistakes in life. Only then can they grow and change. Take agency, realise you got yourself where you are. Only you can get yourself out. Dan in Cork. Is it that straightforward?
No, it's not. I think we all, you know, life is all about solving problems, as I said. And then when you have a problem, you get two things. You get positive emotions or negative emotions. Negative is feedback that you have a problem to solve. And if you can't solve it yourself, you need to get help. So you can't just say it's up to yourself, because ultimately when you are an addict, it's so powerful. You're so consumed with this drug, that you need help and support. You know, it's substance based addicts are the lucky ones, right? Because with support and help, and commitment, they'll understand quickly enough what their issue is, and they can overcome it. It's the people that have problems like gambling addictions and you know, even food addictions, that takes you 10 or 15 years to realise, hold on, this is hidden and I have a problem now. So I don't think it's as easy as saying if you make a mistake, it's up to you to solve it.
Yeah. Great lad, Philly. Did a presentation in Granard, County Longford last year, and he was fantastic the way he got through to all the young lads in the room. Didn't leave until he had a photo with everyone and left a lasting impression on us all in Granard. A great role model to young people, the way he lives his life on and off the field. That's Thomas there. And ask Philly about his time as a soccer player over at Nottingham Forest. That was in the book, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you got a trial, did you?
Yeah, soccer was my actually first sport I played. And then at the age of 14, I went over to Nottingham Forest. Me and a friend of mine, Mark Hartigan, in Ballymun. And we went over, we were playing a team of trialists, and we didn't really get a call back. And we kind of offered a couple of more trials after that, but gave the sport up straight away when I came back, because it fell in love with the
team. And did you get a call earlier this year to go over and to be a strength and conditioning coach for some Premiership club? Was that this year?
No, I've been asked to consult. I think I was asked to consult 3 years ago with a team over there.
And now Jim McGuinness, of course, true Celtic, and now he's got his first managerial role in America.
Yeah. He was in Russia. I was in China as well.
Was he in China? That's China.
So, yeah, like there's a really powerful culture in GAA, and there's a lot of things that other sports can learn from the sport itself.
Like what?
You know, culture is a huge thing. Like, you know, in soccer in this country, there's a very poor culture. Like,
right.
If you look, you can go right through the ranks of it. You can start from the Irish team. The setup itself, the FEI, the Air Tristy League, the Irish Football League, and there's a lot that can be done.
Right. Would you ever go back to soccer in a managerial role?
Managerial, I'm involved. I've been involved the last couple of years with soccer. I've been consulting with teams.
Right.
So I won't say the names of them, because I don't really want to.
Right, okay. Well, don't if you don't want to. I'm not going to force you. Jim Gavin, any chance Jim can come to Old Trafford and sort out the mess as Mike in Cork? Philly Anthony Rathfarnham, Philly should be working across all schools, talking to kids and informing our young adults. Great role model and super honest person. My girlfriend passed away on the 3rd of December this year, addiction. She was a good person. The drugs took her life away at 39.
Yeah.
There's going to be 350 probably empty chairs this Christmas because of drug overdoses.
In 2015, there was 700 deaths. There was 400 deaths. Drug and alcohol related deaths, and there was 400 mental health related deaths. There was 120 odd car accident deaths, and then there was like 30 influenza deaths. There's campaigns every year around all of them topics apart from drug and alcohol, right? That's why there needs to be a bigger message. That's why there needs to be a bigger movement in this country to stop people losing their lives.
I think it's going to happen. And listen, continue to do what you're doing. And I know you can't make 50 of yourself, so you can't visit every school in the country, but, you know, it's just bit by bit, piece by piece. And I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. And I know it's going to be tinged with sadness because of the loss of your dad during the year, but give your mum a big hug for us. Thanks so much. Happy Christmas, Phil.
Thank you. Cheers.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.